Good morning, everybody. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and it is March the 21st. And we are here for our last time with the Oregon Department of Education agency, and we're on slide number 247. And do I need to open a hearing on some?
On both those bills.
55-6, open a public hearing on 55-16, 55-17. And welcome. Mr. Wilson, do you want to say anything before we get started?
First of all, lest you forgot, the presentation itself is back on February 28th. That's where you find it, and slide 247. Director, or I guess it's Deputy Superintendent Neuer, is in D.C., I believe, meeting with the education department there and the secretary. So Mr. Krager is here, who's the Assistant Director of Finance and Administration, to go through the remaining slides. You'll notice that there are two familiar faces to go through their parts of the staffing. So mostly what you'll see today is the staffing for the agency, even though you've seen a little of that for early learning and youth development already. So they're going to be discussing generally the remaining portions of the department.
We get Mr. Krager and company, and Dr. Neuer is back there with Betsy. Good luck.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith Warner, for the record, I'm Rick Krager. I'm Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Administration. And also here with me today is Don Huckabee, Assistant Superintendent for Teaching, Learning, and Assessment, as well as Sarah Drinkwater, the Assistant Superintendent for Student Services. And again, as Doug alluded to, Our fearless leader is in Washington, D.C., and by the way, probably watching us on TV right now, so we're being judged here, so be kind to us. Also, in the spirit of basketball, I chose Butler just to get into the conversation you were having before, so I'm still alive and in the bracket. So.
Good luck.
took a long shot.
And you're asking for money this morning? Rick, it's going to be a tough question.
So as again, Doug alluded to, we are starting on slide 247. Before we start there, I just want to take you back about 300 slides to the very beginning when we started here, and just kind of give you a glimpse of our organizational structure that we had provided to you when we first started. And again, it depicts the organization into three different colors here. We've talked about the Early Learning Division as well as the Youth Development Division, which are depicted on the end of the org chart. What we're going to be focusing mostly on here today is all those areas in green, with the exception that we have spoken to the Oregon School for the Deaf as well as the juvenile delinquency education programs, and those were covered in grant need. There are some FTE associated with one of those direct services, so we won't spend any time specifically on those. But this is, again, just to give you an idea of what our focus will be. We have about 56 slides to get through, so we'll do our best here to get you through, because I know you want to move on to your next budgets. So I'm going to start, first of all, with slide 248 in representation of our budget. Our current legislatively adopted budget is $316.1 million of total funds. I do want to make a reference point here, and that when you look at this, it's a little bit deceiving. About 42% of this is actually related to grants, and these are grants specifically to federal charter schools. Speak a little bit about that here shortly, as well as the Oregon Capital Matching Improvement Program. And again, we'll speak to both of those areas here shortly. These were put in our operations budget. We've been speaking to Doug about this. This will be a transition into grant aid where it really does belong and will be presented in the future. So again, I just wanted to point that out. I'll speak to that to make sure we're talking apples to apples as we go through that. So when you make those adjustments at 316.1, in reality, our operation budget is about $182.4 million currently in our 2015-17. When you put all that together, our biggest share of funding that supports our operation comes from federal dollars. About 50% comes from federal monies, and again, we'll talk about that as that rolls up into the current service level. So speaking of, as we go into current service level, you can see.
I have a question about that, Mr.
Yes, Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not about basketball. Okay, the federal funding position, does that also pick up their PERS obligation and their health care?
Madam Co-Chair, Ms. Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, yes, it does in terms of it federal does. Positions.
So clarification. So that's not coming out of the general fund at all, those FTE slots.
Representative Wisnett, no, it doesn't.
Thank you.
So again, as it relates to the current service level, you'll see $237.1 million total. Again, to do a translation for you to make sure that we make the adjustment for the grants, about 25% of the current service level is represented in this chart as the grants for both of those programs that I previously mentioned. So again, when you look at the total budget for 17-19, it's about $185.8 million. And so when you compare that to the current budget of 182.4, it's about a 1.9% increase in operations. So again, just to give you that understanding of how much our operational total has changed between the two bienniums. I should also mention here that the total FTE count for 17-19 is 43, a little over 43 FTE in total. And again, as I mentioned earlier, if some of you are looking at our budget and you see 510, we would mention the Oregon School for the Deaf as well as the correction programs separately in the grant and aid. That's the reason it doesn't total up. So this next busy chart is kind of where we're going to spend some of our time, kind of going around the clock in terms of our operational offices. These are all the offices, again, that you saw on the flow chart earlier. Again, I'm going to point out kind of top left where you see charter school grants and school facilities. You can see that's about, again, 21.7%. Those are the total dollars in there. And again, those will be dollars that are carved out and put into the grant need as we adjust into 17-19. But again, just wanted to point out these are the offices that we'll be covering here today. Again, as Doug alluded to, the Youth Development Division as well as the Early Learning Division, those were covered in those various presentations, so we will not be touching on those. But again, they are part of the entire operational budget for the agency. A bar chart here to give you a little bit of breakdown of the expenditure categories of that $237 million. Again, $49.2 million of that is in special payments associated to the grants that I mentioned. You see that we have state government charges at 2.2. Our biggest share, of course, though, being personal services at $100 million that supports the 433 FTE that I had mentioned. And then we have about 35% that is specific to service and supplies. This next chart gives you a idea of the entire 237, and again, ELD, YDD was presented separately, but it does give you an idea of where the different costs are associated with each of those components. ELD is about 13% of the operation budget. YDD is about 2% of the entire operation budget. So what we're going to be focusing on here is the remaining 85%. That we call K through 12. Again, that's both Don and Sarah's office that support all those billions of dollar programs that we have been speaking about the previous days. But in addition, it's important to note that our support operations, my staff, the information services, we support the entire agency. So it's not just the K-12 component, it's both ELD, YDD. We are the support system for that. So that is included in that 85%.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Can you also confirm you also support the state school fund? Like the runs, all that information, that also comes out of your work as well.
Madam Co-Chair, in terms of the staffing that we have, particularly in my office, the finance administration, yes, we support the state school fund, the distribution, the accountability around that whole process.
Thank you.
So we're going to start with our first office, which is, again, Salam's the Deputy Superintendent's office. It's made up of 20 total positions. You will see five subunits here in the organizational chart, communications, receptions. We have our legal and legislative affairs, policy operations. We have two positions specific to tribal relations. And then we have one FTE associated with internal audits. So, again, this is Salam's office that's directed completely from his area. As we move into the total dollars for this budget, $15.2 million. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the charter school, the federal charter school grant is actually within this particular office and administered out of that. That is $7 million of this $15.2 million that you see here. The other two-thirds of the budget is primarily for the personal service costs and the service and supply costs of administering all the responsibilities, of which I'll speak to here shortly. Here is a summary of the office itself. Again, you can see at the top in the chart we have the total dollars that support. Again, a big share of that is federal dollars that come from the charter school grant. There is about $5.1 million of general funds supporting this office, and then $2.1 million of other funds. We break down, again, the offices for you, so you can see, the subunits of the office and where they're at. The one thing I do want to mention just here briefly as it relates to the $7 million that we have for charter schools. This was an $8.8 million grant that this committee actually approved back in December of 2015. It was a three-year grant that was specifically targeted to existing or charter schools that were in the early planning process. Ideally, it was focused on helping improve the overall outcomes of the charter schools that we have currently in place. Right now, I can report out that we have 8 total grants with the charter schools throughout, and that program continues to operate very successfully. I'm also happy to report we just had a recent federal audit review of that particular program, and I've gotten very positive results so far with the staffing. I should also mention there is a limited duration position associated with that was approved this biennium. As with the budget process, that phases out and it has to be restored in the governor's record, the legislative approved budget. So that you will see as we get to the governor's recommendation, be a position that is requested to be added back. If not, then of course we wouldn't be able to administer that program going forward. Just backing up here.
Representative Wisner.
That last bullet, Assistant Direct Superintendent, could you tell me about that? Are you going to talk about that later? The military children. I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Co-chair Smith-Warner, co-chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, this is a responsibility, and I am certainly happy to have someone provide you a little bit more specifics. What I can tell you, this is a statutory requirement in which the State Board of Education serves as that particular function, and they operate within their existing board meetings. The State Board of Education represents for that. Certainly happy, though, Representative Wisnett, to provide you some more information. I'm not as versed in it.
Which, that there's 11,000 military kids.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Since we hesitated on this page, then I'll ask the question. So the $7 million, the federal grant for charter schools, so I assume since it's a grant, it has an end. And so I'm trying to understand what happens. Or we're making progress, you said, but I assume those funds are being well spent. But when the funds run out, I don't know if it's next year or the following year, what happens then?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Moreau, Representative Lively. So it is a three-year grant that started in September of 2015. So it has a three-year life ending at September 30th of 2018. We're in progress. We're making excellent progress on it. Once the money goes away, then the position as well as the grants that support the existing charter schools. Again, the idea behind these grants is to help elevate and the effectiveness of the existing charter school programs.
Represent Parrish.
Thank you. So the president's budget includes a $1.4 billion line item for charter schools, school choice. How do you assume that your office is going to be prepared to go and chase those dollars to our state?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Senator Moreau, Representative Parrish, excellent question. Yes, we were analyzing the budget last week. As you well know, there's not a lot of details associated with other than that we know that there is going to be increased resources put towards charter schools. We certainly stand ready to be able to address that once we have more information. My understanding is the details of the president's budget will be coming out in April. I also know that this is a conversation that Deputy Superintendent Norris probably have been having over this last weekend, so I'm anxious to hear some of the information he brings back in terms of how they see that perhaps rolling out. Right. So, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Monroe, just to finish up on the Office of Deputy Superintendent. Slides 255 and 256 provide you kind of a long representation of the various responsibilities. And again, Representative Wisnett, I'll make sure to follow back with you with a little bit more information. I apologize for not having the specifics around that, but certainly we'll give you some more information on that particular function. But you will see a variety of things, including obviously leadership and staffing and management oversight. But just to point out some of the key responsibilities, one of the things that I think is very unique about the Department of Education is the amount of rules and regulations that we constantly have to review, adopt through the State Board of Education. And we have a very good legal and legislative policy area that really focuses on that, and that takes a lot of effort and time. In addition, when you're dealing with 197 school districts and 19 education service districts throughout the state, certainly, as I'm sure you can imagine, there's a lot of time spent within the field through our Deputy Superintendent's office, and he uses his staff very wisely in terms of managing those responsibilities. So again, a lot of responsibilities associated with that leadership, and I think runs very, very effectively. Just to give you a sense of the governor's recommended budget as it relates to this office, what you will find as all of us go through these offices, you'll see line items that talk about reductions related to professional services and vacancy factor. One of the things that in the governor's budget is proposed in total, you'll see a $6.3 million general fund operation reduction. That will be accomplished through a series of cuts that we have to make administratively in relation to reductions in travel, reductions in professional services, cost efficiency. We're looking at potentially holding positions vacant longer than what we traditionally see, again, to try to capture these savings. Certainly those have impacts, but from the standpoint of the alternative of having to cut positions that we very much need to be able to manage our programs, this is an alternative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Assistant Superintendent, I've had a concern about vacant positions since 2011. I understand what you're saying here in 90 to 120 days, but if we're talking about how many positions, that's a lot of money. There's been one of your other agencies talked about doing, it could have been ELC or, we give you money for 12 months for that position. So do we need the position? Do we not need the position? 120 days, that's a significant amount of time. I understand that the co-chairs are looking at vacant positions again. LFO had started a policy of asking agencies to identify all vacant positions that are 6 months or older and justifying it. One of the few times I got the front page of the Oregonian is we identified so many vacant positions, it was in the $300 million range of money that we're giving agencies for positions that are not being filled. Is it a slush fund? You know, it's debatable. But when cuts come, as we expect this session, 20 or 30 positions in 120 days, that's getting into some money. Do you know how many positions you're doing that for, and do you have any positions that are vacant for more than 6 months? You cannot justify.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, in terms of this particular calculation, what we have elected to do, presented in our governor's budget, is develop overall policy for the agency as it relates to, because currently the way the budget works is everything is factored in as a 90-day vacancy. What we're suggesting is to go 1 month longer to be able to accrue some additional savings to help with the budget deficit. So it's something that would be applied across the entire agency to all positions. Certainly there will be exceptions made in the cases of where you have critical positions that have to be filled at a faster rate. So we'll have that process. In terms of your question as it relates, do we have any positions that we don't need? Certainly no is the answer, that we basically maximize the use of all of our positions. Obviously sometimes we have trouble in recruiting for positions in terms of identifying successful candidates, but as based on our analysis, we've done our best to try and mitigate any additional growth of positions and also be able to maintain what we have.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the vacant position thing will be one of the things we'll be taking a look at. We actually had some internal discussions yesterday about it, so
thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I was going to go back. I'll comment first on Mr. Wilson. I have another follow-up, please. I sent Representative Nathanson the background on my bill. The bill I have was coordinated with Mr. Wilson's office, and it is a procedure that we can't take that money that was developed if it cannot be justified. Follow-up to the...
Go ahead.
Mr. Assistant Superintendent, I understand what you're saying. Is the 90-day policy, is that in writing? Is that we always, or is that just practice? Is it?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, in terms of the 90-day vacancy factor calculation, that's part of most all agency budget, I believe all. I'll look to Doug as in response to that, but all agencies have some form of vacancy factor that's put in place based on their experience.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, I don't want to get in because I'm not sure if I fully understand how it's calculated anymore since I was in an agency, but there is, as part of the calculation of current service level, there is a formula that is used in coming up with vacancy savings based on ongoing turnover. Agencies can appeal part of that if they have justification, then it's up to the chief financial officer to accept or decline that appeal. But it is built into the current service level. If you look at the budget documents in detail, you'll see a negative number for vacancy factor. It's called the formal title.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You either need the position, Mr. Wilson, or you don't need the position for 12 months. Thank you.
So, Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, Department of Administrative Services remind me that typically with the recruitment process, it's typically about a 3-month process in terms of actually getting someone on board. So that's part of the savings. What we're saying with our vacancy factor is to increase that.
We can debate. We're not going to be more fun to debate the basketball team. I can understand that for some key positions, but not at what it was, depending what level you're recruiting for. And I imagine the majority of the vacancies we're filling are down here, and I wouldn't agree with you on the, you know, where the good offensive team's going to win their defensive team or big teams. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for the indulgence.
Oh, it'll be nice when March Madness is over. Go ahead. No.
So continuing on to slide 257, just to finish.
Madam Co-Chair. Yeah,
thank you, because I have it about this. So on, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. That staff reduction, is that position currently vacant?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, no, it's not.
Okay.
So slide 257, again, is approximately $400,000. It's all general fund cut. And again, it's maintained are implemented through a series of administrative reductions as well as the elimination of one FTE. In terms of investments, two areas to mention here in the governor's recommended budget. The first is what we have traditionally called as a cleanup package, where we address some of the small personnel changes. This particular portion of the cleanup package is primarily related to the federal fund position that I mentioned to you. Again, it's a limited duration. It phases out. In order for it to come back, it has to be added. So this is just a federal fund increase and the add of one FTE limited duration for the charter school grant for the remaining of 17-19. In addition, we have $200,000 added to this office for the tribal curriculum. That's policy package 113 that we mentioned to you during the grant in aid. It's a total of $2 million, $1.8 going to our tribal partners, and the $200,000 professional services that will be used to help administer that particular program. Moving on to the next office is our Office of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And Madam Co-Chair, Senator Co-Chair Monroe, what I will do is add just a little bit of history to this particular office. Currently, it's 12 positions, which includes our equity policy and operations and civil rights. Historically, again, in 2013, the legislature passed House Bill 3233, which supported the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning, which is a carve-out specifically from the state school fund. One element of that bill was to add 6 FTE to join an existing 3 FTE to deal with some of the responsibilities outlined in that particular bill, of which one of those was specifically supporting and working towards the reduction of achievement gap with English language learners. So that was, again, specifically in 2013. We had three and six positions were added, creating the office equity. Then in 2015, through the passage of two additional bills, House Bill 3499 as well as House Bill 2016, which we have spoken to you about, the English language learner grants, the $12.5 billion carve out was House Bill 3499, and then we had the African American Education Plan, which was House Bill 2016. There were three additional staff added to support that additional workload as well. So adding those three to the existing nine is where the Office of Equity was, again, historically was built. These positions, again, are responsible for carrying out those grant programs as well as working through all of the agency programs in building equity within each of those particular areas. So just a little bit of information in terms of the funding. It's a total of $6 million. Again, 60% of it is related to the staffing, the 12 FTE staffing costs. 40% is service and supply costs, which is associated with a variety of contract, technical services contracts as it relates to carrying out, again, many of the responsibilities for both the African American Education Plan as well as the English language learners. There is also some a small portion of grant assistance built into that as well. Again, this is just a recap of some of the things that I have just provided to you, giving you the total breakout of the funding. You can see the majority of the funding for this office is other funds. And I will, again, mention, and for Representative Lively's benefit, that a big portion of those other funds is related to the carve-out that we see both in House Bill 3499 as well as some of the carve-out that we get through the network that supports this office. So approximately 91% of it is federal fund and other funds. They administer, again, those two programs, and they also have two FTE associated with the civil rights team, which works through a variety of technical assistance and serves as a complaint vehicle for all school districts. Just,
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. So one way to... The way that I interpreted your description of the evolution of that department is that before the 2013 session, none of those positions existed. This entire subset of the department did not exist.
Co-chair Smith Warner, what did represent was about three FTE. That was actually part of, I believe, at that time, the deputy superintendent's office.
Okay, so it was kind of after those two sessions and those bills that you called out, it was divided into its own. It was put into its own division and
okay, Co-chair, and that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
So just to the governor's budget very quickly, you can see a very small reduction. Again, this is part of our administrative efficiency guidelines that we will be implementing. The reason the amount is so small is because there's very little general fund associated with this particular area, and so hence the smaller amount. So with that, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Smith-Warner, I'm going to move to my colleague to my left, Don Huckabee, who's going to talk about the Office of Teaching, Learning, and Assessment.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. I'm Don Huckabee, Assistant Superintendent with the Office of Teaching, Learning, and Assessment, and I'm happy to be here to be able to share about our office. You'll see from our organizational chart we have 95 positions within the Office of Teaching, Learning, and Assessment in six different areas. Those include assessment, our secondary, post-secondary transitions, standards and instructional support, our federal programs, district and school effectiveness, and data and operations. So those are our six big areas. In our budget, you'll see that we have a very large services and supplies in comparison to some of the other budgets that you'll see today. And in part, that's about $36.9 million is in that services supply. A big part is that is for our assessment system, so that would be a large part. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. Our assessment contracts are approximately $20 million to serve our students. And we do also have some Oregon Virtual School District is also a piece of that. So there's a big contract there that provides the supports and services to students in that manner. Within our office, our current service level, our budget is about $59 million. You'll see of that about $21.5 is from general fund, with $32.6 being federal funds. So a very large part of our budget is from our federal funds and federal resources. 64% is from other and federal funds, so the other funds are from the carve-out for the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, as well as Oregon Virtual School District. And the remaining 36% then is our general fund. Within our office, we provide support and leadership to our schools and districts in professional development for our teachers and tools for our students to be successful through our grants and our program. We have responsibility for more than two dozen state and federal grants and providing technical assistance and trainings to those grantees, monitoring those programs, collecting program data, and collaborating with our partners statewide. You'll see from this slide that our grants and other programs are $542.8 million. So our staff provide the support, the monitoring, and accountability around those grants. As I mentioned before, one of the largest parts of our budget is assessment. And so the student assessments are required by both Oregon law as well as federal law. Our office, when you see that, approximately 55% of our budget is to not only give the assessments, but more importantly, to identify the content standards that what we expect our students to know and be able to do at various grade levels in all content areas. So this office is bigger than the assessments. It's more, and really we're working to really focus on what is it the students are doing, and then how do we know that they've accomplished that is then through the assessments. Our test results are used to inform both school and district improvement processes, as well as use for our state performance measures. And we use those results as evidence of our essential skills for our high school students to obtain the high school diploma, and it's part of our state and our federal accountability system. With the exception of our extended assessments, all of our Oregon mathematics, English language arts, English language proficiency, science, and social science proficiency tests are administered online, and our kindergarten assessments are administered manually. To maintain our funding for 17-19, our governor's recommended budget has included a $3.8 million request to replace one-time federal funds that were used in the 15-17 biennium to fund to address a funding gap that we had.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I'm not familiar at all with this, so I'm just trying to understand. So when you talk about assessments, that's the cost per student for the assessment. I'm trying to understand the difference between what we spend in the department versus what the school districts have to spend for assessments.
Thank you. Senator Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Representative Lively. What is in our budget is for the state summative assessment. So those are our contracts that we have to obtain the items that we use to the system that is used to deliver those online assessments. In the case of the kindergarten assessment, that's the cost to print them, get them out to schools and districts, et cetera. Schools at the local level may choose to do other assessments on their own, and so those would then be costs, and those tend to be formative and interim assessments to address, to identify how their students are progressing towards that summative assessment that's given by the state. And so those would be costs that are borne by the individual school district at their choice.
Senator Robles.
Yeah, just a short one, because this is one of those that always frustrates me. Have we looked at what Finland's doing? They have no state assessment. They outperform every other country in the world on almost any test that they give. And they've found that having assessments in the classroom by qualified teachers really seems to solve their problem. Have we really had a conversation about that and saved this money and maybe put it into teachers' salaries or someplace that other people who are showing us around the world that there's another way to do this? Have we had conversations or looked at the data that's out there on most of the high-performing nations and groups on all of these other assessments that we do internationally that do better than us? Because I just every once in a while think that we spend a lot of money on things that if we spend it the way those countries are spending it might improve our educational institutions. I just wondered if we've done any of that or if we are really got our heads down and doing the things that the federal government, everybody's telling us to do.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Senator Roblin, we do have these state assessments are required by state and federal law. While we would like to be able to entertain some other ideas until we have some relief from those mandates, we are kind of in a position to, in order to maintain federal funds, to maintain even our state resources based on state law, we are held to giving assessments in grades 3 through 8 in language arts, mathematics, and at once at high school. So,
thank you.
This next slide gives you a sense of the assessments that were given in the 15-16 year and in each of the various state assessments that we provide. Just wanted to give you that information so that you had it and were aware of how many assessments are given over the course of 1 year.
Representative Parrish.
So, quick question on sort of the 11th grade test. Is that the SBAC, the Smarter Balanced?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Representative Parrish. Our current state assessment is the Smarter Balance for grades 3 through 8 and at the high school level in English, Language, Arts,
Follow
and
up.
Mathematics.
Go ahead.
So legislation in the Ed Policy Committee would take the Smarter Balance piece out of that and potentially say that you could use another, like ACT or SAT, which I'd be curious, one, does that have a diagnostic component for people to be able to then use that data back? Because I didn't quite get that answer out of the other committee. And then two, if that bill passes, would then you pay for ACT and SAT instead of the Smarter Balanced? And or do we think that because that's something that's not part of what you're doing, schools would need to pick up the tab for that? If the bill's not clear.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Representative Parrish, we are required to give, by state law and by federal law, an assessment at grade, at some point in the high school level. It's currently Smarter Balanced. If we were to look at another assessment, we would need to make sure that it met requirements that address the content standards that we teach, and we would have to, it would have to pass a technical peer review for our federal side of it. We would then continue to fund whatever assessment, because we're required by law to do that.
Okay.
Continuing on with assessments, because these are areas where in the governor's budget we have some additional resource needs. The English language proficiency assessment, about 10% of our students are non-native English speakers, and you'll see there the most common first language of our students is Spanish. We have over 150 languages are spoken by Oregon students and their families in our state. All English learners in Oregon are required to take the state English language proficiency or ELPA test each year, and we use those results to track not only student progress but also program progress. We are currently now in the development of a new, more flexible system for assessment, and it's known as ELPA 21. And it's been developed and funded with a one-time, as you'll see, $9 million federal grant over the past two biennia. We are, one of the components in this design is to make sure that our students are achieving at their highest levels possible and are college and career ready when they leave our schools. And I believe you may recall from previous presentations that our students who are English learners who exit English, our English learner development programs, but before they hit high school, are graduating at higher rates than even our native English speakers. So within our governor's recommended budget, you'll note that there's an additional $1.3 million to fully implement the ELPA 21 in the 17-18 year as that grant has gone away. Additionally, then, in the science and kindergarten assessments, the Oregon State Board of Education adopted the Next Generation Science Standards in March of 2014 as our state science standards. Our plan is to incorporate these new standards into a new Oregon science assessment in the 2018-19 school year. And so in order for us to develop a new summative science assessment along with the state scoring guides that align to these standards, we will need a one-time investment investment in the 17-19 biennium of $1.5 million, and this investment is included in the governor's recommended budget. With the kindergarten assessment, we that's been supported through a limited duration position, and as we continue to refine that assessment tool, we're requesting that that position be made permanent to allow us to look at identifying a pilot that we could be done online for the kindergarten assessment, and then further streamline that manual administration, the data collection process, et cetera. So that investment is also included in our 17-19 budget.
Senator Roblin.
So as we move more and more to online applications of all these tests, are we helping school districts deal with having enough computers and other kinds of stuff, or is that left up to the local districts to solve their problem with respect to access?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Senator Roblin, that is a local issue. We do provide technical guidance as to when we anticipate that there may be changes in infrastructure that might be needed, in updated versions of, and we put that out many years in advance as we know about it from our vendors. But it is a local.
Follow up.
So, yeah, along that line, is there a standard about how often they have to replace their machines to make them viable for the next generation stuff? Do we have an estimate of how often they're going to have to redo their investment in technology in schools?
Senator Monroe, Representative Smith-Warner, Senator Roblin. From our perspective, we do not give a list or an identification of how many years they should be. I mean, there's within technology, as you are well aware, it changes tomorrow. What we have today is obsolete. We do our best to work with our vendors to keep that requirement down, to extend the life of the technology as long as possible. But there does come a time when certain pieces of technology will no longer be able to be utilized for this purpose, but they can be utilized for other purposes in the classroom.
Okay, thanks.
In the governor's recommended budget, you'll see, as Rick indicated in the deputy superintendent offices, the standard reductions that we are looking to employ of approximately $3.7 million, and that is 4.75 FTE. In our investments, we have a policy package, and these I alluded to in the previous slides. Policy package 70 is an investment of $3.8 million to replace the one-time federal revenues that we had for our student assessments. And we're showing a decrease of that in the federal funds. In policy package 106, the student assessment cost, you'll see that's approximately $3.5 million. That is to fund the new assessments, both in science, our kindergarten assessment, as well as our ELPA 21, and that is an increase of 1.0 FTE, again, making that limited duration to permanent. Package 111 is the agency reconciliation cleanup bill, and you'll notice it's actually a decrease instead of an increase, although through movement of dollars from services and supplies to personal service, we're able then to actually increase our FTE, which is really we had partial positions that we needed to augment a little bit there. And then you'll also note policy package 114 is in the governor's budget. This approximately $2 million is the operations cost to coordinate and manage the what we anticipate the work to be with Measure 98. And just a reminder that the total Measure 98 in the governor's budget is $141.5 million. So the balance of that, the 139 point something, is what goes grant aid out to our school districts.
Senator Roblin.
So as we put these packages together, do we look at the ongoing costs pushing it forward to the next year? Mm-hmm. So you replace a one-time fund and you get an FTE. So now the following year, the costs are going to maybe escalate more than the other costs. Do we do that at the same time we're doing these budgets so that we can get an estimate of going out the next biennium, how much cost that increases?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Senators Roblin, yes, in terms of looking out future costs, we're always wanting to make sure we're informing you if there's going to be anything above your traditional inflationary type cost associated with it. So in the case that Don is speaking to in relation to the student assessment, I think that, you know, these are all newer type assessments that we're presenting to you now. These, the costs that we're presenting in one case with the kindergarten assessment is an ongoing cost. The science assessment is a one-time as it relates to the development. And then we have all the other costs associated with carrying those assessments forward built in.
Okay. I'll look forward to it. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. If we could just go back briefly to 270. So your reduction proposal, the bottom one, is the operations cost of a $15 million reduction in the grant and aid for CTE STEM. So if I just wanted to clarify, so in the grant and aid budget, there were a couple line items that were reduced with the assumption that they would be backfilled by Mission 98 implementation.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, yes, you're correct. As you recall, with the CTE STEM related, there were about four programs were actually eliminated mm-hmm. in that, and then the rest of them were reduced. With Measure 98, the passage, the ability to fund those programs is offered through that, but it's not necessarily required. So positions could potentially come back in the form of how they're currently administered, or they might be in a different manner, depending on what the resolution is to how Measure 98 is implemented.
Okay.
Senator Roblin.
No, I was just, I'm fine, thanks.
Okay.
Good morning, Co-Chair Senator Monroe, Representative Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. For the record, Sarah Drinkwater, Assistant Superintendent, Student Services. So I'm here this morning to share with you the information related to the Office of Student Services. And with the overview, we are focusing on the five programs that are in white, not the YSEP, JDEP, and Oregon School for the Deaf. As Rick mentioned, those were described earlier last week in presentations. So the Office of Student Services is made up of 83 positions. That's just a little over 82 FTE. And they fall into five different areas, education programs and assessment, early intervention, early childhood special education, child nutrition programs, regional programs, and then operations and district resources. The pie chart for you here related to student services is made up mainly of personal services and services and supplies. As mentioned, personal services is mainly staff at 53.4%, which is almost $19 million. Related to services and supplies at 46%, some of the examples of large supplies and services that are provided, a very large one is the food distribution contract in child nutrition programs. It's well over $1 million, and that is moving the child nutrition food to our state and around our state. We also
Ms. Drinkwater, I read, I think last week, that the feds are really cutting back nutrition programs, slicing them dramatically. I just wondered if the state office, if we're going to try and make up that loss, or if kids are just going to have to go hungry across the state.
Co-Chairs Monroe and Smith-Warner, Senator Monroe, you bring up a very good question, and there is a lot of financial information and budget information in flux. The most recent that we have heard related to, specifically to sort of child nutrition programs and school meals is relatively minor. There's been a lot of proposed cuts in the Women, Infants, and Children program, and so we're still waiting to see, but as Rick had mentioned, we stand ready to take advantage of whatever we need to help continue the services for our children and families here in Oregon.
Well, I would hope that would be the case. I, for one, have been fighting to implement these child nutrition programs for the last decade, before school, after school, and also summer nutrition programs, which become very important to a lot of children, especially those in poverty. And so if the feds are going to drop the ball on this, I for one, am going to try and fight to make sure that the state picks it up and goes with it, because I think, you know, anybody that's been a teacher knows if a kid hasn't eaten, isn't eating, if they're not getting nutrition, it's pretty hard to teach them anything.
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, Senator Monroe, you are absolutely right, and we need to keep a special diligence related to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where those funds come from for the child nutrition programs.
Yeah, I hope Dr. Noor is making that point back right now today.
So some of the other examples in services and supplies, we also have contracts with the Office for Administrative Hearings related to special education complaints, mediators, and investigators. In addition, there are eight transition network facilitator positions housed around the state related to supporting students with more severe disabilities as they transition out of public school into life and to work experiences. I also want to just remind you, back in my presentation over a week ago, that Student Services also is supported very strongly and heavily by federal funds, and those were in the tables that were presented to you previously. So if we look at the general overview of operations for Student Services, again, you can see the major area is federal funds. And our budget is, current service level is over $35 million. And again, supporting early intervention, early childhood special ed, child nutrition, regional programs, education programs, and assessment. The assessment is tied to the assessment sort of framework that Dawn mentioned, and that would be the extended assessment for students with more severe disabilities. And then operations and district resources. And within that area also is included pupil transportation and fingerprinting. So,
Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. Can you just give us a sense of where the other funds in this section are from, what kind of other funds they are?
Co-chair Monroe and Smith Warner, some of the other funds would be carve-outs for student services from the state school fund.
Is that some of them or all of them?
Most all of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we administer and support, monitor the IDEA funds that are then allocated out to school districts and programs, providing supplemental services for students with disabilities. We also administer the child nutrition programs, as mentioned before, and that requires a lot of on-site reviews, both fiscal and programmatic, looking at school meal patterns and the nutrition value of the food that is served. We also support the correctional education programs, as Rick mentioned earlier, and regional programs for those students with low incidence disabilities. And again, our technical assistance and resources, we are out much in the field to school districts and educational service programs. The review page, looking at the governor's recommended budget, includes $318,000 of reductions. Again, related to the areas that Rick described, looking at the reduction in professional services and the vacancy factor. There is one investment that we are a part of here, policy package 111, that's been mentioned about, described as the cleanup, and specifically for student services related to three FTE positions in trial nutrition, two of which have been limited duration.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Back to your organizational chart. I must have missed it in your earlier presentations. Regional programs and best practice, is that for special ed only, or is that across the board? And could you define also direct operations and division resources, 18 positions? What's
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and Representative Wisnett, I'd be happy to. The regional programs and best practices is a combination kind of team. The regional programs are those programs that are specifically for the low incidence populations that I mentioned more than a week ago, deafblind. The best practices part is actually some grants that go across several offices that looks at better inclusion of students with disabilities in general education. So it's teaming within a district, general ed and special education, and involves different offices in ODE as we together support and provide technical assistance to school districts. So it's a combination of of both of those. Related to operations and district resources, specifically that is looking at the data unit and data team that helps with collection of special education data and allocation of financial resources. And the operations also includes pupil transportation and fingerprinting work that we do.
One quick follow-up, Ms. Kutcher. Thank you, Ms. Kutcher. In best practices, I had a bill I did on looking at best practices for poverty. Is poverty part of your special interest groups or not?
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith-Mortar and Representative Wisnett, when you're describing specifically your bill related to poverty, we don't. It's not exactly in best practices, but we include those, the equity unit, diversity and inclusion in the work that we're doing, and the best practices also relates to the dyslexia bill. That position is within that team.
Thank you, Ms. Kutcher.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, I'm going to finish the final two office, so a race to the finish here in terms of providing you a quick overview of these. The first is our Office of Accountability, Research, and Information Services, and under the leadership of Deputy Superintendent Knorr, he's really worked hard to try to do some restructuring, and this is the newest of that restructure where we have combined our accountability, our research, our information technology, and data management area. In total, this is 59.87 FTE within the budget. I should mention, as it relates to information technology, this was an area that was changed quite a bit during the last session. Senator Monroe, I'm sure, remembers where there was a lot of federal dollars that was going to information technology that discontinued. About 16 FTE were removed. That had a bit of an impact as it relates to the services and has really required us to relook and reevaluate that whole particular area. And this is a result of much of that work as we start to try to combine and bring resources together to create a more efficient way of delivering the necessary services. The total budget in this area is $17.5 million. Again, not surprisingly, the majority of those are related to staffing costs through primarily our information technology area, which is the largest of those. Our service and supply cost is relatively modest at about $2.5-3 million, and most of this, again, as you can imagine, is cost of technology, hardware, software, network, etc., in terms of keeping our systems moving and making sure that we're as efficient as possible. The total dollars you can see here is a breakdown of how this is funded. Most of it, as you can see, is in general fund, is the primary area of support here. 21% of it of the office in federal and other funds, that's primarily indirect costs that's taken off of federal awards that provides support for this particular office. Again, as mentioned, there are three primary areas associated with this. The one thing I should mention, obviously with the Department of Education, we have a great deal of responsibilities around data collection and working with school district. This particular area is instrumental. I cannot stress enough how important this particular area is to making that as efficient as possible. When you're talking about 290 applications within the department and over 100 different data collections, certainly there is a big workload, and they do a wonderful job in terms of making that as manageable as possible, but certainly need that staff to be able to continue working towards that responsibility. In addition, as I said, we also have our research area and our accountability that, again, provides a lot of the work around data collection, data reporting. Validation is a big piece of what we do here in the department. We have to make sure that the information that's coming in from 197 school districts, that's re-verified, and that the publications that we're putting out are as accurate as possible. As we move into the governor's recommended budget in this particular area, you can see there's about $1 million reduction. Again, the first three line items are associated with our standard administrative reductions that we're trying to employ next biennium. The one I might point out is about a $600,000 decrease related to two staff. This is actually a transfer out of our agency to the Department of Administrative Services for the purposes of the governor's executive order around system security and consolidation. So it's a reduction to our budget, but certainly the FTE will be on the other side as it relates to, I'm sure, the Department of Administrative Services budget. One package, even though, again, this is a cleanup package, I don't want to underestimate the importance. This is something that both the Chief Information Officer and I have worked a lot on to try to get this particular information technology straightened out from the last biennium in light of some of the reductions. Again, this is a very low cost, $120,000, but it's a lot of movement and restructuring to ensure that we have the staffing and the support that we need to be able to efficiently administer our information technology. Next office, of course, they say save the best for the last. So we got finance and administration, which is my office, and I'm being judged by the people in the back on how well I promote this. So I've got to be very upbeat about it. In terms of the Office of Finance Administration, we have 52 FTE associated with the office. As you can see, it's your standard financial services, procurement, budget services, and central service operations. One thing I want to point out, specifically, we have the school finance and school facilities, and I'll speak a little bit to this, but this is the area of the department that administers the Oregon's capital improvement program, and I'll talk a little bit about that here in a moment. But we administer all that as it's a bond originating responsibility. So we administer both the elements of creating the resources as well as administering those at a program level. And then lastly, point out our employee services area that's responsible for our standard HR work as well as our facilities management. We do work with two separate unions at the Department of Education, so our HR function is a very important one as we work through bargaining and a variety of other HR responsibilities. Our budget, as you can see, 68.7. Again, I don't want any of you to be shocked when you see that number. Again, a big portion of that is 64% related to special payments. This is approximately $44.4 million that is related to those grants for our capital improvement program. That's what takes up the majority of the budget. The rest of it is, again, our personal services. You can see our service and supply budget is quite large because we administer all the central services. So all your facilities, your rent, office supplies, everything comes through our department in terms of administering that, and certainly illustrates the need for the higher service and supply budget.
Senator Roblin.
So were those grants, was that part of the seismic retrofit that we did for schools as well, or is that in a separate place?
Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, that is in the Business Oregon Department. There was a program that was specifically targeted for the seismic retrofit. However, our program also can support those type of improvements. And again, I can speak to that here shortly.
Thank you.
So again, just a bit of a recap. You can see here illustrated for you, there's the financial administration. That's me. And then, of course, we have our employee services, financial services, procurement, and our school finance and school facilities administration. As Representative Smith Warner had mentioned earlier, we are the responsible office for the state school fund process. So we have staff dedicated specifically to that monthly, annual, every 3 year type process. Or at any point in time, we're managing three different school years. So it's certainly a staff intensive process, but our folks do a wonderful job in terms of administering that and ensuring top notch accountability. So just to spend a little bit, since we've talked a lot about the Oregon, the school facilities, just to give you a little bit of background. So Senate Bill 447 was passed last biennium, and that's what created the Office of School Facilities. As part of that, there was a specific program, $126 million of general obligation bonds that were dedicated to the department to implement the matching program. As we call it AWESOM, the Oregon School Capital Information Matching Program. What this really was intended to do was try to be a leverage, to be an incentive to help school districts who are in need of capital improvements to pass their local bonds. That's where the majority of facilities cost or facilities improvements are generated through for school districts. However, many school districts have had a very difficult time in passing those bonds, primarily because of low tax bases. So this particular program was helped to incentivize that. We were, as I said, granted $126.2 million. We've been extremely successful in this program. We've went around three elections. So, again, the program works around the election cycle. We started in May of 2016. We also hit the November 2016 election, and we're gearing up for the May 2017. In total, for the first two elections, we were able to issue $94.8 million of bonds that were specifically for 23 local projects. In total, the capital improvement projects, though our portion was 94.8, but in total, the bonds were $1.8 billion for the entire project. So, as you can see, there clearly a huge leverage that we have with this particular program. The economic activity is another area I'd like to really illustrate to everyone in terms of using some of the basic economic multipliers. We're seeing anywhere up to a $2.6 billion leverage statewide from economic activity that's created through this program. So again, very, very impressive results we've been able to put together. For our May election, we just issued last week $30 million more of bonds. Those are now out, and that's going to create $866 million of capital improvement projects. So you can add that to the $1.8 billion we had already done. And again, as you can see, lots of project activity.
Senator Roblin.
And do those loans also give the availability to local districts to buy furniture and other kinds of stuff in the as they're building this new building?
Co-chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, so one thing to clarify, they are grants that we provide.
Grants.
Second thing, in terms of how the money is used, it has to be used on capital-type improvements, normally with facilities. However, there is some flexibility as it relates to certain types of assets. Co-Chair Smith-Warner, I thought maybe you might like the map. I know that we had put some maps together for you in relation to all of our other programs, but this is specific to where we've been able to spread out the dollars of the total projects that we have done to date. Again, 31 total around the state with $126 million. You can see the star denotes the different types of elections that we have been able to hit within this. So again, there's been a very nice distribution of dollars. And then again, I should just mention that the leverage piece to this is really huge. One thing I did want to point out in terms of the awards that we have done, 23 total awards, the other are 8 commitments. Of those 23 awards, 9 of those school districts had not passed a bond since 2000. So again, one of the big pieces around this particular legislation is how can we help districts that have traditionally had a difficult time in passing bonds. I think that the data is demonstrating that we're having an effect. One of those in particular had never passed a bond. So we're pretty happy with the results that
we're
seeing.
Don't see any stars in Coos or Curry County. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick point of personal privilege. Do you know of those 8 tentative commitments, are any of them the PPS bond?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, yes.
Okay, thank you.
I think we're hoping for this next election.
Yeah.
And Co-Chair Smith-Warner might mention again, it's a commitment, so it's only based on them being
if
able to
pass
their
it.
Bonds.
Amen.
So just real quickly to the governor's budget, some reductions. Again, the standards that we have talked to you about, we are looking at reducing a half-time FTE through some efficiency measures that we have put in place. In addition, the last two elements is in our service and supply budgets. We're trying to figure out ways to cut down our AG cost as well as some of our central services. You might remember the box that is my responsibility for the entire department. We're trying to find different ways through efficiencies to be able to reduce that overall budget to come up with nearly a $900,000 savings next biennium.
Representative Wisnett.
It's the next slide, if anyone committee has on this one, anything, I want to go back. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Again, I wanted to get through the briefing. Budget services and school fund nets, let's say budget services. What does that include, Mr. Assistant?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. Budget services, basically the work that we do in monitoring all of our agency budget, the work that we're doing here right now in terms of developing the agency request
school
budget.
District budgets?
No.
Okay. May I make, Mr. Co-Chair? Just make a comment. I do appreciate the assistance of your office. I had a work group to get together. I'm concerned about school districts' pension obligation bonds that they're issuing without voter approval, and that the largest part of the PERS unfunded liability is school districts and community colleges. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if the bill will get down here. We got together and came up with a bill that has a system that's strictly subjective. If your unfunded liability from a school district is less than 80% funded, you should not be issuing more pension obligation bonds. Because if you look, it is the biggest part of the unfunded liability of school districts.
They only have about two KBM.
It is difficult to borrow money to pay debt. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
So, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, just to finish up on the office here again, in terms of investments in the governor's recommended budget, there are two areas. The governor is recommending to continue the AWESOME program at $118.97 million. The one reference I should make to this particular program is in the governor's recommended budget, it's asked to be targeted towards environmental-related projects, specifically addressing things like the lead-based issue that we recently faced. So a bit of a modification. That's something that's going to require some further examination in terms of appropriate usage, but just wanted to make sure that we had a note of that. And then we have a small cleanup package, again, within this budget, like the rest of them, that ultimately relates in about an FTE increase. Real quickly, Co-Chair Monroe, Smith-Warner, just to finish up the very, very last piece of the department's budget, the debt service. This is a $20.5 million total, of which 19.9 is general fund. What that is related to is the bonds that I was just speaking to, the $126 million. This is the debt service on those. That's in the general fund. The lottery portion is related to bonds that were issued around 2000 and related to just the debt service. It's finishing up the payments on those. I think the last payments are due in 1921, and then that will be completely extinguished. The governor's recommended budget also should mention has a reduction that's reporting here, $5 million related to debt service. I should point your attention to this. Initially, the anticipation of the savings would have come from canceling the bond sale that I spoke of that we put out last week. After further, when the governor's budget was coming out, there was a lot of things going on, obviously, with the lead initiative. There was a huge need, obviously, and so the governor elected to approve that bond sale to move forward. So this is a particular area that, even though it's suggesting there would be a savings, we will have to look and figure out how to address that moving forward. And then the last two pieces are related, again, the debt service for the new bonds, the $118 million of new bonds for the programs, as well as the $9.4 million from the Oregon School for the Deaf that Sarah spoke about a few days ago. And with that, Co-Chair Monroe.
Co-Chair.
I want to give you the decision about doing KPMs or today, but I do have one kind of overall comment that I wanted to make about some of your budget proposals.
I was going to say, can we take this, would this be a good place to break and finish tomorrow? Or okay. Madam Co-Chair,
okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for the wrapping up the long presentation. I truly mean this in a positive way. I know that you all get tasked with doing, you know, whether ODE, heck, we throw a lot of stuff at you guys and say, hey, can you do this while you're at it? Hey, can you do that while you're at it? And I just, you know, as we are going through these budgets line by line and being told of the various chunks of money that we need to get to, I would just like to kind of come back at some point to the fact that out of your chunk of the FTE, which is 316.7 FTE, there's only 1.5 positions eliminated in any of your proposals. You have 6 CTE STEM, but the assumption is that they'll be backfilled by something else. You move 2 people over to DAS. So I'm just concerned that, you know, that is being part of the review. and not just in where it makes sense. I don't want to do it. I mean, we've talked about the maintenance of efforts, and I get that a lot of that is funded by other things. I just you know, to channel Representative Wisnett and some of my colleagues, there's just a concern that is there, you know, and I know there's no Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse any more than there is, you know, the subdivision that's full of people who aren't really doing anything. And that being said, when we're having to look at all of this, it's hard not to look at some of those FTEs as well. So I'm not sure really there's a question in there. But, sorry.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on 5516, 5517.
We need to formally carry those two bills over till tomorrow.
Carrying 5516 and 17 over until tomorrow, when we will finish up with the Department of Education and hear from DAS. And then we have one of the small agency, which two small agency budgets that we will be acting on tomorrow. Anything else?
That's good.
Wilson, that takes care of it. Okay, we're adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we're adjourned.
Thank you, sir.